Hello, this is Pastor Patrick Hines here at Brittle Heights Presbyterian Church, and today I'd like to press on in J. Gresham Machen's book, Christianity and Liberalism, and so I'd like to get right into it here, and picking up right where we left off, we finished with this paragraph here, so we're starting with this next one. And again, just want to reiterate why I'm doing this. I'm doing this because the apostasy from the gospel and from the truth of the Bible that Machen faced is exactly identical. It is exactly identical to the liberalism and the progressivism that it has crept into and is taking over and destroying the PCA and other Reformed denominations and also regular evangelical denominations too. So it's without any more ado, let me get right to it. It might seem as though with such laws, obscurantism has reached its lowest possible depths. Now, obscurantism, of course, what he means by that is all this scholarly speak that puts mud and fog over the truth and makes it unintelligible to anybody. It obscures the truth. Okay, he continues, but there are depths lower still. In the state of Oregon, on Election Day, 1922, so that's almost exactly 100 years ago, 99 years ago, a law was passed by a referendum vote in accordance with which all children in the state are required to attend public schools. Christian schools and private schools, at least in the all-important lower grades, are thus wiped out of existence. Such laws, which, if the present tempter of the people prevails, will probably soon be extended far beyond the bounds of one state, and they were, just so you know, which will mean, of course, the ultimate destruction of all real education. I'd like to point out Machen was right, and it has extended beyond Oregon, and it has resulted in the destruction of all real education. Because schools today, including colleges and institutions of higher learning, they do not teach people how to think. They don't teach them how to reason morally. They don't teach them how to write or think clearly. They teach them what to think and what to repeat on every subject. Okay, just continuing. The destruction of all real education. When one considers what the public schools of America and many places already are, their materialism, their discouragement of any sustained intellectual effort, their encouragement of the dangerous pseudoscientific fads of experimental psychology, one can only be appalled by the thought of a commonwealth in which there is no escape from such a soul-killing system. And it's only gotten 1,000 times worse since 1922. You have kids today, I mean, they don't know how to think about anything. Where do we come from? I believe in Darwin. We evolved from pond slime. Well, has anyone ever seen that happen? Is there any observational evidence? No, but we're told it's scientific and that all scientists believe this. Yeah, but it's never been seen or observed and certainly cannot be proven. We can't go into the past and see life assembling itself or see self-replicating proteins or whatever come into existence by themselves. Yeah, well, but that's what we're told to believe, so that's what we believe. It's a soul-killing system. Okay, and it has killed the soul of this nation. Okay, Machen continues on here. But the principle of such laws and their ultimate tendency are far worse than the immediate results. A public school system in itself is indeed of enormous benefit to the race. But it is of benefit only if it is kept healthy at every moment by the absolutely free possibility of the competition of private schools. A public school system, if it means the providing of free education for those who desire it, is a noteworthy and beneficent achievement of modern times. But when once it becomes monopolistic, it is the most perfect instrument of tyranny which has yet been devised. He's right. He's right. And one of his predecessors there at Old Princeton long ago, let me see if I can find the quotation here, about government education. Was A.A. Hodge. A.A. Hodge has a great quotation. I think I just found it here. Oh, good. Here it is. Yeah, this is from his Evangelical Theology. Hodge in 1886. So this is about nearly 40 years prior to Machen saying what he said. Listen to what Hodge said, A.A. Hodge said, about America's newly formed public school system. It was newly formed in 1886. It is capable of exact demonstration that if every party in the state has the right of excluding from the public schools whatever he does not believe to be true, then he that believes most must give way to him that believes least. And then he that believes least must give way to him that believes absolutely nothing, no matter in how small a minority the atheists or agnostics may be. It is self-evident that on this scheme, if it is consistently and persistently carried out in all parts of the country, the United States system of national popular education will be the most efficient and wide instrument for the propagation of atheism which the world has ever seen. He is exactly correct, my friends. He is exactly right. And that comes from Evangelical Theology by Archibald Alexander Hodge, page 242. He's right. My goodness. Wow. Okay, let's press on here. Okay, public system of education. When it becomes monopolistic, when the people that run the public education are going to decide what's taught about everything, when they monopolize the educational curriculum, okay, it is the most perfect instrument of tyranny which has yet been devised. You need to understand, there is nothing that is more comprehensively religious than education. And if you're thinking, well, I mean, math is math, isn't it? Science is science, isn't it? Physics is physics, isn't it? Chemistry is chemistry, isn't it? No. No. If you don't teach that the God of heaven and earth made mathematics and chemistry and the laws that govern all those things, then you're committing treason against him. Freedom of thought in the Middle Ages was combated by the Inquisition, but the modern method is far more effective. Place the lives of children in their formative years, despite the convictions of their parents, under the intimate control of experts appointed by the state. Force them then to attend schools where the higher aspirations of humanity are crushed out, and where the mind is filled with the materialism of the day, and it is difficult to see how even the remnants of liberty can subsist. Wow. 99 years ago he said that. Teach kids that they're African apes and that we evolved from pond sludge. What will happen in that situation when everybody's taught that? The state will deify itself and become the god of the people raised in such a way. See, it's never the case that men are without religion. They just change religions. And if they don't believe that there's a god, if they don't believe in a transcendent creator, they have to have a god. Who becomes god? The state. The state. That's why he says, it's difficult to see how even the remnants of liberty can subsist. If people are taught materialism is true and evolution is true, they will lose their freedom because the state will take over everything. Machen continues. Such a tyranny, supported as it is by a perverse technique used as the instrument in destroying human souls, is certainly far more dangerous than the crude tyrannies of the past, which, despite their weapons of fire and sword, permitted thought, at least, to be free. The truth is that the materialistic paternalism of the present day, if allowed to go on unchecked, will rapidly make of America one huge Main Street, where spiritual adventure will be discouraged and democracy will be regarded as consisting in the reduction of all mankind to the proportions of the narrowest and least gifted of the citizens. God grant that there may come a reaction, and that the great principles of Anglo-Saxon liberty may be rediscovered before it is too late. But whatever solution be found for the educational and social problems of our own country, a lamentable condition must be detected in the world at large. It cannot be denied that great men are few or non-existent, and that there has been a general contracting of the area of personal life. Material betterment has gone hand in hand with spiritual decline. He's right. The more junk we have, the more stuff we have, the more distracted we are from the things that are most important, the things that matter most. Such a condition of the world ought to cause the choice between modernism and traditionalism, liberalism and conservatism, to be approached without any of the prejudice which is too often displayed. In view of the lamentable defects of modern life, a type of religion certainly should not be commended simply because it is modern or condemned simply because it is old. On the contrary, the condition of mankind is such that one may well ask what it is that made the men of past generations so great and the men of the present generation so small. In the midst of all the material achievements of modern life, one may well ask the question whether in gaining the whole world we have not lost our own soul. Are we forever condemned to live the sordid life of utilitarianism? Or is there some lost secret which, if rediscovered, will restore to mankind something of the glories of the past? Such a secret, the writer of this little book would discover in the Christian religion. But the Christian religion which is meant is certainly not the religion of the modern liberal church. And I want to inject Dr. Machen 100 years later. The Christian religion which is meant is certainly not the progressive religion of the modern PCA. It's not the same religion. And as I said in the last time I read a little bit of Machen here, I told our presbytery that the God presented by Revoice and by these progressives, it's not the same God we worship. It's a different God. It's a God I don't recognize because he's powerless. He evidently has lost his ability at least to liberate people from certain kinds of sexual sin like homosexuality and transgenderism. Evidently, he can't do that anymore. God has lost this fake, phony, finite deity they worship. Evidently, he doesn't have the power to do that anymore for some strange reason. And therefore, it's not the same God as the God of Holy Scripture. It's a different deity. It's a finite, phony deity. So we're not talking about the Christianity of the modern PCA. Listen. But the Christian religion which is meant is certainly not the religion of the modern PCA, the modern progressive church, but a message of divine grace, almost forgotten now, as it was in the Middle Ages, but destined to burst forth once more in God's good time, in a new reformation, and bring light and freedom to mankind. What that message is can be made clear, as is the case with all definition, only by way of exclusion, by way of contrast. Man, he's so right. The concept of antithesis, of something that is correct and therefore all contrary to it is false, the concept of antithesis, is very much gone today. And yet you can't have true Christianity without it. Unless you exclude false doctrine and exclude individuals that don't believe the truth, you don't have Christianity anymore. You have something else entirely. In setting forth the current liberalism, and I would say the current progressivism, now almost dominant in the church, over against Christianity, we are animated, therefore, by no merely negative or polemical purpose. On the contrary, by showing what Christianity is, not we hope to be able, is, now we hope to be able to show what Christianity is. Excuse me, I'm reading that sentence wrong. by showing what Christianity is not, we hope to be able to show what Christianity is. That's great, he's right. By showing what it is not, we're going to show what it is, in order that men may be led to turn from the weak and beggarly elements and have recourse again to the grace of God. And why would he say that? Why would he say that the true Christianity is a restoration of grace over against liberalism, or in our case, against progressivism? Because progressivism, just like liberalism, is legalism. Because it doesn't have redemption. It doesn't have God liberating people from sin, from both its tyranny and its guilt in the gospel of Christ. All you're left with is ethics. All you're left with is legalism. That's why Revoice and those men that push it in the PCA and have no problem with it, they're fine with Roman Catholic speakers at their conferences and Brother Trout. Here, let me show you real quick here. Let me see if I can point this. I wanted to show you something. I remembered this from doing my research on this just the other day. And let's see, let's pull this up here. Let's pull this up. Let me see for a second here and get this right. Come on now. Point to it, baby. Where is it? Why is it not getting this in the screen here? Come on. Source number 2, Google Chrome, YouTube. Why is it not showing here? Anyway, maybe you'll be able to hear it. Let's see. Revoice Brother Trout. Okay, listen to this. I bet you can't see it. A monk, a Roman Catholic monk, was speaking at Revoice.
So, here I am, the man in the white dress before you.
Hardy har har. Yeah, he's wearing a monk garb. I guess it's part of the vow of renouncing looking nice or something.
So live seven blocks from here when I was studying in St. Louis, and I would walk through this neighborhood to go to church often, and frequently had questions, screams about being in the KKK at me.
He's wearing a white robe.
Are you a Jedi? I have no idea what questions I would get if they knew the nature of this conference and the man in the dress walked in. Who knows? But let me see.
Anyway, the guy's a monk. He's a monk. And speaking as an efficient spokesperson for the gospel of Christ. They're put forward as Christians. You know, when Greg Johnson was interviewed by Cross Politic, which is, as I found out, have found out since then, is Federal Visionism 101, because it's that's Doug Wilson's whole mess up there in Moscow, and they call themselves Presbyterians, everything else. Anyway, Cross Politic, I'm not endorsing them in any way, shape, or form. But when he was on there with them, he said, "These are our brothers and sisters who are fighting against this sin, blah, 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 blah." See, you don't need to believe the gospel. It's just going to be legalism. The gospel, they don't even care about the gospel. You can have members of a false religion speak at your conference in the name of Christ as adequate spokespersons for the truth, and nobody bats an eye. And I kept bringing that up on our Revoice committee, going, this is a massive problem to have Roman Catholic speakers at your conference. And, of course, the progressive on the committee, you know, was wanting to lop my head off for even suggesting such a thing. I just was shocked. Nobody cares about the gospel. In the progressivism of the PCA, it's disgusting to see. Okay, let's keep going here. Chapter 1. So we just finished the introduction. Let's press on here with Machen. Doctrine. Okay, remember, there's, I think, six chapters. The first one is just on doctrine in general. Modern liberalism in the church, whatever judgment may be passed upon it, is at any rate no longer merely an academic matter. It is no longer a matter merely of theological seminaries or universities. On the contrary, its attack upon the fundamentals of the Christian faith is being carried on vigorously by Sunday school lesson helps, by the pulpit, and by the religious press. If such an attack be unjustified, the remedy is not to be found, as some devout persons have suggested, in the abolition of theological seminaries or the abandonment of scientific theology, but rather in a more earnest search after truth and a more loyal devotion to it when once it is found. At the theological seminaries and universities, however, the roots of the great issue are more clearly seen than in the world at large. Among students, the reassuring employment of traditional phrases is often abandoned, and the advocates of a new religion are not at pains, as they are in the church at large, to maintain an appearance of conformity with the past. But such frankness, we are convinced, ought to be extended to the people as a whole. Few desires on the part of religious teachers have been more harmfully exaggerated than the desire to avoid giving offense. Only too often that desire has come perilously near dishonesty. See, man, that's exactly right. If you don't tell people what God really thinks of homosexuality, you are being dishonest, or you're coming perilously close to being dishonest. Listen, the religious teacher, in his heart of hearts, is well aware of the radicalism of his views, but is unwilling to relinquish his place in the hallowed atmosphere of the church by speaking his whole mind. I just want to say, ministers, pastors, elders, if you know what's true, and you just want to avoid it in the name of being Christ-centered or whatever, we have a problem here, okay? You're not being honest. So maybe you feel a little squeamish about all this progressivism and everything, and maybe it's kind of making you a little uncomfortable, and you don't really want to put your name out there to be singled out for attack and everything else, and I'm just kind of, you know, don't want to stir the apple cart a little bit here. That's exactly what we can't do. We have to be about confronting error, especially error that is fatal to Christianity. And progressivism is fatal to Christianity. And I know that. I know that beyond shadow of a doubt, that these men who sponsored Revoice and are doing all the critical race theory and are doing men in white tights dancing during communion and all that other crazy stuff, they don't care about the gospel at all. They don't care about the gospel of Jesus Christ at all. They would tell you they do, but by their actions, they deny it. by promoting falsehood, by promoting purveyors of false gospels in the name of Christ. We know they don't care. But if someone does know the truth, and they're not willing to say it, we've got bigger problems then. Jesus said, "Whoever is ashamed of me and my words in this crooked and perverse generation, of him the Son of Man will be ashamed when he comes with the angels on the last day." So we don't want to be ashamed of anything in Scripture. We don't want to be ashamed of anything in the Bible. Especially when it comes to the cultural issues of our time and the most important issues that, let's face it, they're dragging people to hell. The Revoice Conference and the false teaching that went forth from that, it's how many people has that sent to hell? Probably a lot. Probably a lot. And as that guy that came out of Revoice and has now embraced the truth and has rescinded his coming out as gay and is saying, "No, I'm a man, I'm going to live my life as a man, I'm rejecting that sexual orientation is real." And what a brave guy. He's trying to help his elders bring reformation. You know, I commend him for it. He's gutsy. He's gutsy. And he may pay dearly for trying to do that. But that's exactly what we have to do. We have to stand up and speak what is true. And it may cost us. It's getting to the point where it might cost us. And we can't be afraid of the faces of men. We need to have more fear of the judgment of God if we don't tell the truth about these kinds of things. I did a sermon this past Sunday on critical race theory and woke, and being woke, and told the truth about it and said that it's a doctrine of demons, it's false, it needs to be rejected, it's racist, and everything else. And I was asked by someone, you know, would you mind if I shared this on social media? And I said, of course not. I don't care at all. Share it everywhere. I want the whole world to know that. Okay, and that's not because I'm some great, brave person. I'm not in any way, shape, or form. I'm just saying, I do not fear what men might say. I mean, people have said a lot of nasty things to me over the years for the stuff that I have preached on. And I've gotten nasty letters, emails. These LGBT Christians, supposedly, these LGBT Christians that talk about how persecuted they've been, mistreated they've been, I would love to read some of the emails I've gotten from LGBT people in the PCA. But I won't read them because I would have to make my channel X-rated. Okay? The abuse is coming towards us, all right? I've never said anything like that to someone who holds the views that they hold, but they don't care about saying all kinds of stuff. I had to block people from my YouTube channel. People who are professing Christians, who are just all upset and all up in arms and saying just horrible, awful, nasty things. And you think, you know, out of the overflow of one's heart, the mouth speaks, said Jesus. So it makes me wonder what exactly is in these people's heart, if that much filth and garbage can come out of it against someone who's loving them enough to tell them the truth. So anyway, I had to block someone recently for sending me a bunch of four-letter expletives via text of someone from the old days, way back in Ohio, who is saying that they're same-sex attracted, blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know, pointed out there's no such thing as orientation, everything else. Wow. The response was nuclear, and I blocked that individual because I don't want my kids to accidentally say, "Hey, Dad, what does this word spell?" if they, you know, see my phone or whatever. Anyway, so listen to this again. I have this highlighted here. "Few desires on the part of religious teachers have been more harmfully exaggerated than the desire to avoid giving offense." Stop right there. That's what the problem is. That's what these progressives are all about. They think they're evangelical. They think that they're evangelistic. They think they're winning the lost by making sure they don't offend anybody, by saying anything the way the Bible says it and saying it with passion. But they're not. They're not doing the lost any favors, and they're certainly angering God by not speaking the truth in love. "Only too often that desire has come perilously near dishonesty. The religious teacher in his heart of hearts is well aware of the radicalism of his views, but is unwilling to relinquish his place in the hallowed atmosphere of the church by speaking his whole mind. Against all such policy of concealment or palliation, our sympathies are altogether with those men, whether radicals or conservatives, who have a passion for light." What then, at bottom, when the traditional phrases have all been stripped away, is the real meaning of the present revolt against the fundamentals of the Christian faith? What, in brief, are the teachings of modern liberalism, and I would say progressivism, as over against the teachings of Christianity? At the outset, we are met with an objection. Teachings, it is said, are unimportant. The exposition of the teachings of liberalism and the teachings of Christianity, therefore, can arouse no interest at the present day. Creeds are merely the changing expression of a unitary Christian experience, and provided only they express that experience, they are all equally good. The teachings of liberalism, therefore, might be as far removed as possible from the teachings of historic Christianity, and yet the two might be at bottom the same. Such is the way in which expression is often given to the modern hostility to doctrine. But is it really doctrine as such that is objected to, and not rather one particular doctrine in the interests of another? Undoubtedly, in many forms of liberalism, it is the latter alternative which fits the case. There are doctrines of modern liberalism, I would say progressivism, just as tenaciously and intolerantly upheld as any doctrines that find a place in the historic creeds. You see what he's saying? The progressives, they are every bit as hardcore, passionate, and intolerant when you contradict their doctrines. When you contradict what they think about sexual orientation. When you contradict what they think about race. When you contradict what they think about ecumenical activities with Roman Catholicism and other groups like that. They would have a fit and behead you for it. Listen. There are doctrines of modern liberalism just as tenaciously and intolerantly upheld as any doctrines that find a place in the historic creeds. That is so true. They claim we're the ones that are pig-headed and intolerant, and we're the ones that hold things tenaciously. They are every bit as tenacious as we are, except for their falsehoods. Listen, such, for example, are the liberal doctrines of the universal fatherhood of God and the universal brotherhood of man. Exactly right. That is hardcore stuff, man. They would hold that as intolerantly of anything contrary to it as passionately as you could say. These doctrines are, as we shall see, contrary to the doctrines of the Christian religion, but doctrines, they are all the same, and as such, they require intellectual defense. In seeming to object to all theology, the liberal preacher is often merely objecting to one system of theology in the interests of another. And the desired immunity from theological controversy has not yet been attained. You see, even trying to deny the Christian faith, you're going to be committed to certain doctrines. And you're going to be committed in an intolerant way to them. Listen, sometimes, however, the modern objection to doctrine is more seriously meant. And whether the objection be well-founded or not, the real meaning of it should at least be faced. That meaning is perfectly plain. The objection involves an out-and-out skepticism. If all creeds are equally true, then since they are contradictory to one another, they are all equally false, or at least equally uncertain. We are indulging, therefore, in a mere juggling with words. To say that all creeds are equally true, and that they are based upon experience, is merely to fall back upon that agnosticism which 50 years ago was regarded as the deadliest enemy of the church. The enemy has not really been changed into a friend merely because he has been received within the camp. Very different is the Christian conception of a creed. And listen to this. According to the Christian conception, a creed is not a mere expression of Christian experience, but on the contrary, it is a setting forth of those facts upon which experience is based. Man, that's just spot on the money. But, it will be said, Christianity is a life, not a doctrine. The assertion is often made, and it has an appearance of godliness, but it is radically false. And to detect its falsity, one does not even need to be a Christian. For to say that Christianity is a life is to make an assertion in the sphere of history. The assertion does not lie in the sphere of ideals. It is far different from saying that Christianity ought to be a life, or that the ideal religion is a life. The assertion that Christianity is a life, meaning a way that you live your life, is subject to historical investigation exactly as is the assertion that the Roman Empire under Nero was a free democracy. Possibly, the Roman Empire under Nero would have been better if it had been a free democracy, but the historical question is simply whether, as a matter of fact, it was a free democracy or no. Christianity is a historical phenomenon. Like the Roman Empire, or the Kingdom of Prussia, or the United States of America, And as an historical phenomena, it must be investigated on the basis of historical evidence. Wow. Okay, that's a good place to stop, and we'll pick it up here at this next paragraph. As much as I'm tempted to go on here, we're at the 30-minute mark, so I want to put a bookmark there. But, man, isn't he so right? The liberals, they chide us, and the progressives chide us for being narrow-minded and being bigots and being so dogmatic in our commitments. They are every bit, if not more, dogmatic and narrow-minded in their commitments. They are every bit as intolerant of anything contrary to their progressivism as we are in defending biblical truth. So let us get past the, you guys are so mean and narrow-minded. You guys are the meanest, most narrow-minded people I've ever met, ever talked to. Vicious. Vicious in your commitment to your liberal progressive ideas. Okay. Whew, I'm a little worked up now. So we'll pick it up right there. Man, this next section is so important. But I'm going to try to stay committed to half hour long. May try to do one of these every day that I work, unless I'm like super, super busy. But isn't this book great? I just love it. Christianity and Liberalism is a book that ought to be studied by churchmen today. And you just have to keep, you have to keep reminding yourself, this is 100 years old. This is 100 years old. He's talking about America 100 years ago. And yet what he's saying is exactly the same stuff we're dealing with now. Same stuff. Okay, the names change, but the heresies and the denials of Scripture do not. Unbelief does not. So, thank you for watching or for listening. This is Pastor Patrick Hines of Bridwell Heights Presbyterian Church, and you've been listening to the Pulpit Supplemental Podcast. You can find us on the web at www.bridwellheightspca.org. Our sermons are streamed through Sermon Audio, and you can listen to that on the iTunes podcast version of Bridwell Heights Presbyterian Church. Feel free to join us any Sunday morning for worship at 11 a.m. sharp at 108 Bridwell Heights Road in Kingsport, Tennessee. And may the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace.